extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, a hidden but sweaty David Goss. What's up, boys? How you feeling, Dave?
Not yet. You can't peg me for sweaty before I'm sweaty. It is, my indoor thermometer says it is 89 and plus 50% humidity inside this room at
Why don't you turn on your air conditioner?
Yeah, what? Don't you have a fan? Like, don't you have something to...
I do have a fan. Here.
I have the rabbit ears. Right before we started recording here, I noticed a buzz in the background, and I just asked an innocent question. Does anybody else hear that? And David Goss might have uttered a few epithets.
I also live in Brooklyn. I just put on a long sleeve shirt just to kind of get a little cozy, get warm.
Okay, just to make sure that you're properly regulated.
How's
for
that
this
feel,
show.
Kalen, you want to play men's league tonight? I actually need one more.
No, man.
Get out there on the field. Come on, I dare
you. Set me up. I'm not going for that.
He's too comfortable. He's too comfortable in his confines. So it's a Tuesday. That's a little strange. That's because of Memorial Day. Hope everybody had a great one with friends, family, whatever you happen to be doing. I happen to be cleaning puke off a toddler in Ottawa, Kansas. But the rest of the day was wonderful. So we're not going to do the full MLS Week 14 rundown. Charlie and I did MLS After Dark on Sunday. Dave, I think you and Kalen did it on Saturday, correct? So if you want to go back to the MLS Today podcast feed, you can get kind of the nitty-gritty breakdown from the weekend there. Because it's Tuesday, because a third of the season is gone, because there are no MLS games until Saturday, June 11th, because of the international break. Actually, I take that back. There is a gloriously random Vancouver RSL game at 7 p.m. on Saturday that stands alone and above all else. So if you really need your MLS fix, you've got it right there on Saturday. Because of that, we are going to give out our grades today for the first third of the season. Parent-teacher conferences, so to speak. So that should be fun. We are grading on each of our own scales. We each have seven teams. We'll see who's the easiest grader, who's the hardest grader, who sort of half-assed it a little bit and just said, it's a third of the way through. You can change it down the line. No worries about that. And we'll talk USMNT because they play Morocco on Wednesday in Cincinnati at TQL Stadium, ESPN2, Unimas.
Wait, so
and
to be
two
clear.
Day in, you can... Yeah,
sorry, to be clear, we did last week go through Supporter Shield, Wooden Spoon, and then this week we're giving our grades for the season so far, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. At least we're not getting ahead of ourselves.
That's your liking?
That's good. Yeah. I think. Well,
no,
I mean,
for sure. Yeah, we never. Yeah, that's extra time. Yeah. No.
Blood alone will spin the wheel of content, Kalen. You know that by now.
Okay. I petition to give, look, instead of the, F, let's go with Charlie's That's Whack. I feel like we should bring that into this.
This is not right. I invented That's Whack for Charlie. We could go Whack. You can take the F away. We could go F away if we want. By the way, on the U.S.-Morocco side, if you want to watch along with us, we're going to do this for every USMNT, every Canadian men's national team game, all the way through the World Cup. Twitch, YouTube Live throughout the game. Susanna, Charlie, Doyle, DeMarcus Beasley, good crew there. And Mehdi Bellucci is going to be on that show as well to give us a little Morocco perspective, which is going to be matter ahead of the World Cup because they're in Canada's group in Qatar. So tune into that one live during the game, Twitch, YouTube Live, a little post-game show afterwards. Then on Thursday, we'll come back and break down the action and give it a little analysis here on Extra Time as well. And the same crew will do USA Uruguay here from Kansas City. And instead of Mehdi, we hope Diego Fagundes will join us, but we're still working on that for Sunday. All right, let's get into it. I have this as the A through F grading scale here, and you guys chime in if you disagree. A is excellent. You know, few to no notes. You are, accumulating all the quote-unquote points that you can, whether they be physical points.
Do we need a rehash on what grades mean?
I was literally about to say, not to waste more time, but one, no one listening needs this, and two, you specifically said your grading rubric is to each their own, and
I'm
now
just,
you're laying
just helping
out
people that,
everyone's
okay,
grading
B
rubric.
B is good, C is fair, but B better. D is, is it a passing grade? This is the only one that could be arguable. Is D a passing grade? I'll ask you guys that.
No. D's a passing grade. Yeah.
No, no. We got to set the standards higher.
D stands for degree.
No, C. I think C is good enough to pass. D is that passing?
Yeah, D is passing, yeah. The only thing that's officially failing, I guess we did need a rehash on this. The only thing that's officially failing is an F, right? Like, yeah, that's
D, it. D is right. You'll get it. You'll get a degree. You'll get through it, but everybody knows that you're really failing.
I feel like it's hard to get a D. I feel like it's really hard to get a D. For
bro,
me,
I did
like
it a lot
get,
in
like,
college.
A
I was able to do it four times a semester, man.
There is so much Cal Berkeley energy here.
Okay, as we push our glasses up on our nose here, an F is obviously fail. We'll see how many Fs we hand out. I don't have any Fs currently on my report card for my seven teams, but I have a feeling I might go that way for one of them when push comes to shove. All right, let's start with Charlotte FC. We've randomized this. I basically gave all of you teams that I thought would kind of run the gamut between A and perhaps F, so you're not all getting overachievers or underachievers from the front of the classroom to the back. We each got a little taste, and I randomized the order here. So it's not going to be A's through F's. It's going to be sorted in an order of my choosing. And we're going to start with Charlotte FC because the big news in MLS this morning on May 31st is that after 14 games, Miguel Angel Ramirez, he's out. He's gone. It wasn't the team anymore. He's the one that's out. Didn't work out for him. Yeah.
Before are we allowed to say that?
What grade is that?
Are we?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess I did. So he said it, and if he can say it, I feel like I can probably say it.
Well, he didn't end up well for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It turned out he couldn't say it.
That's Oh boy, that's not good news for me. This is a worrying trend, let's say, for Charlotte FC and for the greater sort of organization there. You've got over the course of, I don't know, the last 6 months, according to Tom Bogart on Twitter here, technical director Mark Nichols left for Columbus. President Nick Kelly, who was promoted from the president of Charlotte FC to the CEO of Tepper Sports, he stepped down 2 months after that promotion. Tom Glick was there and helped get the team in MLS. He had left. That's why he got promoted. And now head coach Miguel Angel Ramirez gone after 14 games. MLS Today, Dave, I thought you did a great job breaking all this down. I guess I'll start with you on this. What's your reaction? We have people asking, is this the most surprising? How surprising is this? And I'm personally not surprised, given some of the public back and forth that happened between Miguel Angel Ramirez and the front office about player selection, about player signings, and also just the upheaval we've already seen. So I'm not that surprised. I am wondering what this means for Charlotte on the field, because it seemed like Miguel Angel Ramirez was sort of – he was milking some good results out of a roster that didn't always look like they were set up to get him.
You're not surprised, but at the same time, no one had this on the top of their list of next MLS manager in trouble, first manager to go, right?
Yeah, it's sort of like after it happens, you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, writing's on the wall, but like no one thought this would happen this year, and I think that's – part of the frustration is this doesn't feel like a sporting decision. This doesn't feel like a competitive issue decision. So now what's the guiding force? What's the guiding light of this club? If that's not why you are not choosing to keep your manager in place, a guy who helped build the roster was partially built around his fundamentals, his ideas. And as you said, 5-2 at home, which may not lead to a playoff appearance, but it's entertaining. People keep coming back. Like, it's a selling point for the club year one, is that they are a worthwhile draw to come to. They are competitive when you come out to the stadium and watch them in person. So I think that's most of the reaction, is for an entity that's supposed to exist to win games, this doesn't feel like a decision that's made around that.
Feels like a relationship issue between him and Zoran Crneta. And look, we saw that play out publicly. Like, it's... It wasn't like hidden behind closed doors for Miguel Angel Ramirez. He was outspoken about that, and you can understand the ripple effect that would have had internally after he said what I maybe shouldn't have said, but he said it again in preseason before a game was even played. But Doyle, they were getting results. They were making progress on the field. They were seeing guys improve week after week, and they didn't seem to have a full, depending on the guy. I see you nodding at me. What do you make of this?
I think it's probably a personality conflict. Ramirez didn't leave his last club on the best of terms. I think he has a very clear way of how he wants to play and the type of roster that he wants to have. And I think it's probably clear that the sporting director has different ideas for that. And they both sniped at each other a little bit in the press. And when it comes to that type of situation, you know, one guy wins and one guy loses, usually. And usually it's the coach who loses the first one, though. Now, if it keeps going wrong or if it gets worse on field, I don't think it's the next coach who's going to be on the chopping block, right? It does end up being like, okay, Zoran Konecny made this decision. If it keeps going bad, then he's going to be the one who, you know, pays the price for that. So it overall, I mean, you almost have to give him two grades. I think their roster build is like a D at best. If you look at the team that they had on the field on Sunday night in Seattle, there's like two or three starting caliber MLS players on that roster or on that, in that starting 11. And that's rough. That's not a great roster build. The fact that they're only 2 points below the playoff line, I like, honestly, if we had done this show 6 hours ago before this firing was announced, I would have given them a B. I think Ramirez had done a really good job kind of getting blood from a stone here. So it's tough to see. It's tough to imagine that what comes next is going to be appreciably better over what has come so far through 14 games for this Charlotte team. So I don't know if you want to take the off-field D that I gave them and the B that I gave them for on-field and average it out to a C. But like, I'll leave that up to you guys, since you're the voting public here.
You're the grader, though. But a lot of blood references from Doyle so far on this show.
They get a C.
By the way, assistant coach Christian Latanzio is going to be the interim head coach for the rest of 2022. He was an assistant at Man City in those high-level youth teams with Pat Vieira, and then an assistant at NYCFC as well. He sticks around, so does the goalkeeping coach. The rest of the staff, gone.
I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that you gave the D for the build, which is less the responsibility of the manager, especially a new manager coming into MLS. And then the B for the on-field part, which is what is directly run by the manager.
Right.
And for me, when you go to the idea of like this personality clash, which I think that checks out from what I can understand. From the worlds that I've existed in, like, personality clashes are always a part of this whole thing, right, of pro sports. And what usually solves that is winning, or at least being competitive. And that didn't happen in this case, it seems like. And for me, you know, even when I was in Charlotte when he made those comments right before the season started, and it felt to me like he was being savvy, in the sense of like pushing the front office to make some signings. At the time, I think they were rumored to be in for a South American playmaker or winger that I think fell through in the last minute. I can't remember exactly who it was, but
Machis.
It was Machis? Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I think it was more like he was using the media at times to push for more for his club. And then when you see some of the signings that they did make and have brought in, that seemed to only improve the team. So it seemed like, he really had his finger on the pulse of what the team needed, was able to assess what their strengths and weaknesses are and at least make them competitive. Because before the season, I think if we would have gone through and said, who's going to be the first manager to be let go in MLS? I think Miguel Angel Ramirez would have been high on our list because he would have been to say, like, I don't know. He's making these comments. It doesn't look like the build is good. It doesn't look like it's going to work out potentially. And maybe 14 games in the season, yeah, you say goodbye. But then when you look at their place in the table, that's where it doesn't really check out. And I think when you go through the list of, like, it just feels naive, because when you go through the list of past expansion teams, take Austin, go to Miami, go to Cincinnati, go to Minnesota United before that, right? It's hard to come in and be competitive right from the jump in MLS. Now, in other cases, there's other extreme examples with Atlanta United and LAFC, and I think even Nashville to a degree as well. So, but it seemed like maybe the expectation never really matched up with the reality, and that was something that he seemed to be at odds between the manager and the club. But what I would caution against is we know how much this turnover has affected places like Cincinnati. And it's almost like since Charlotte has been like, hold my beer. We're going to like make all these changes and throw things up in the air. And I just think you have to be careful because sometimes that lack of stability is actually the cause of or at the root of all these problems that come. And then it becomes you end up in this cycle where you're constantly flipping and changing instead of building something for the future.
So you have, obviously, Alan Koch lasted 11 games in Cincinnati. So three more games for Miguel Angel Ramirez in that sense. You can go back to other expansion teams and see some of that failure as well. I mean, even Orlando City.
If you are a club in soccer and the name Alan Koch is ever mentioned in your vicinity, things are bad. Sorry, continue.
I mean, look, Adrian Heath in Orlando, like, they let him go after a couple what you would judge to be fairly successful expansion seasons or the start of a campaign in the league, and then they had a lot of upheaval and turmoil for a while as it pertained to what they were doing as well. So, yeah, look, inconsistency is not a good thing. The amount of change they had, I don't think you can look at that and say, boy, that's a great thing. We'll see how they respond now. We'll see who they get as this next manager. The pressure is on Zoran Crnjeta to get that one right and get a guy who matches up with his vision because he got the final say, it seems, here to decide to make a change, and Charlotte will make a change. So your grade was what, C? You're going C, Doyle? That's the grade for Charlotte?
I'll give him a C, yeah.
Okay, solid grade. Fair, but be better. Be better. All right, LA Galaxy, Kalen, get out your grade book. What do you got for him?
Well, now that you guys are telling me D is passing, I'm feeling like maybe my grades are too generous. But I gave the Galaxy a B. They are currently fifth in the table. And some of this is tough because grading, for me, does go off a little bit of recency bias and what we've seen as of late. I felt like this game against Austin, if it would have flipped the other way, I may have ended up with a very different grade. But I feel like overall, when I look back at the beginning of the season for the Galaxy, like, they're in playoff position, which for a club like the Galaxy is the standard, even though it hasn't been as of late. And then on top of it, I think they've been better defensively with a few sort of glitches going back to the old days. But they have shown throughout the course of the season that they can win in more ways than they have in the past. They've won games that are very tightly contested, 1-0 matches. They've been able to kind of, I think Bond has been very good. And then they can also explode for goals, where it was the 4-1 against Austin. And this, I think, also as far as a new way goes, I think this is the first time that they've come back from a deficit at home to win at home as well. So I do think they have some depth to their team. I don't think that they have figured out exactly how the pieces all fit necessarily, and how to best to use. I guess what's the best formation for this team? I think they're still sort of figuring that piece of it out. But for where they are right now, I felt like a solid B.
It would not be a B, I don't think, if Dan Jovlich doesn't come in and rescue them, no?
Yeah, I think this result did affect my grade.
I'm just impressed that Kalen from Berkeley didn't give them, like, sniffy Kiwi sticker as a grade or like a gold
I didn't
star,
have grades actually until middle school, so this is
I'm not shocked by that, Kalen. That's not surprising.
My grade school had it. We didn't have grades, but we had a bog that we tended to, so that might tell you something about the hippy dippy stuff. Doyle, I just want you to give us a little bit of a spiel on Davan Jovlich, because we talked about it a ton with Charlie on Sunday, and he was like, oh, I gotta see more. I'm like, dude, what do you mean you gotta see more? Like, every time he gets on the field,
sorry, Weeby Anders says that you don't
I
have
disagree
time
with
to have
Anders. There are Doyle certain moments that we can go more. At this parent-teacher conference, we're taking up other people's time. Do they need to get Dejan Jovlich on the field as a starter, Doyle?
Yes, because they don't have the ability to explode for goals with the current winger core. Those guys have had more than enough time to show that they're the right choices. They've uniformly shown that they're not, at least not from the start. So I would hope that next game out, whether it's some shade of a 4-4-2 or a 3-5-2, that if you're the Galaxy, you get to see Jovlich and Chicharito up top. I know Greg Vanney has defensive concerns about it. I think those are somewhat justified. But at this point, like, the Galaxy, like, you need two goal scorers out there. Jovlich and Chicharito, give them that.
All right.
Only thing I'll add real quick, besides the goals, the goals, the best thing that makes his case was actually the assist to Chicharito, where he lays it back with the outside of his foot. That is his best case for finding his way into the team, because the goals, they'll take those, but his connection to Chicharito, that's always going to be the decision maker and how they decide to play.
All right, Austin FC. Dave, I wanted to take this one, but I didn't think it was fair. I mean, just too many bonus points that I might have awarded for them extra credit early in the season. But what's your grade for the Verde and Black?
An A for what they've accomplished so far. Fourth in the Western Conference right now. They're relevant in the league. They're competitive. Obviously, they had an environment that was worth coming to last year. Now they're winning in those moments, bringing fans back. They have a star to build around in Jurisi, which is kind of 1A for a lot of MLS teams in terms of where do you start and where do you go. They started their first homegrown, so like they're progressing as a club overall. And then they have maintained their identity of who they are and how they play the game while improving. They are not a great defensive team, but they are not historically bad like they were last year. They were the worst defensive team in the Western Conference last year, third worst in the league because FC Cincinnati and TFC decided to skew the rubric for everyone, which is nice of them to force the curve. But they're not that bad anymore, and they're continuing to improve. So I think for them, it's a perfect season if they ignore this one little mosquito in Kansas City that keeps buzzing around.
Do you think the assignments are going to get harder? Is it the beginning of the semester is always the easiest. You're kind of just easing into it. As the assignments get harder, do they hold the A?
If they make the playoffs, they graduate.
You gave them an A?
Yeah.
Wow.
Why would you not? What's the reason not to?
Because they have 1-5 now that they've started facing actual MLS teams.
But what does it matter? Because the grade is over the season.
It's like a B with shows improvement, but that's fine.
I think showing improvement for a team that was nowhere last year is a good season so far, and where they have to be
in
again.
B's a good grade, man.
If they make,
do I have to explain the rubric again? I thought we understood the rubric.
No, I just think this is the difference between Connecticut and New York right here. So I just think we're going to have a bit of a cultural disconnect.
Okay. Those Long Island schools, they really did this give out. They just hand them out.
The expectation on the North Shores are tough. When you're on this side of the Long Island Sound, there's no room for error. You must be the number one student. I'd say, so again, if they make the playoffs, it's a successful year. They graduate. And they are on their way to doing that, whether they beat great teams or not. And they have, right? So for all the games they've lost, they've also beaten LAFC. They are on the road to that, and they're accomplishing what they need to accomplish while maintaining their identity. I think a lot of the reason people enjoy watching them and what they've built so far.
All right. There's Austin. We see the difference in grading rubrics here. I'm going to go Houston Dynamo, excuse me, are up. That's me. I was going back and forth, but I think I want to be known as a harder grader than an easier grader. So I'm going to give a B+ to Houston. You might be like, oh man, that is a great grade for them, but they're in the playoffs right now. I don't think anybody had that expectation for the Houston Dynamo. Just two losses by two goals or more. I mean, little steps of progress for a team that hasn't shown a ton over the past many years. At this point, two away wins. They had one away win in the last 2 years. I think Paulo Nagamura is shown to be a very good hire for them. They're taking on his personality. He's getting more out of that team than I thought he would get out of that team as well, figuring out ways to use Darwin and some of the other attacking pieces to, let's just say, punch above their talent level at times, even though they're not blowing people away. I think just the fact that you signed Hector Herrera, that might vault them into the A zone for the Houston Dynamo. That signing alone, I know TBD as to how that works out. It could work out poorly, but to change the profile of who they are and their ceiling, I think that was huge for them as well. And they're currently in the playoffs. So I think B+ for them. And if they had been alive in the Open Cup and beat Sporting Kansas City and held on to that 1-0 lead and were in the quarterfinals here, I think I would bump them up to an A. But a B+ for the Houston Dynamo. How does the Politburo feel about that grading?
So to be clear, Weeby took a team that's below Austin, gave them a B+. They have had the most home games so far that they haven't won. He hasn't gone through and counted every opponent they've played, and they lost to Austin FC. But Doyle's complaining that I gave them an A and not a B, and Weeby's over here giving Houston a B+ for being in the playoffs
and
right
for
now.
An A for signing a player.
Yeah. Congratulations to a player who hasn't played so far in the season that we're judging. But Weeby's out here complaining about bonus games when Houston has played the most home games in the playoff race. Mm.
Even with non-Austin fans, I'm in your head on this one right now. Just look at
yeah, clearly.
All in your head. All right. We've got the feedback on the B-plus given the Houston Dynamo. Dallas, FC Dallas, we're keeping in Texas, going 1-2-3 in Texas. Will they get a better grade than the Dynamo? Will they get a better grade than Austin, Doyle? Where does FC Dallas stand?
I give him an A-. Nico Estevez, he fixed the defense. They made some great acquisitions, including Martin Paz. I'm usually against spending an international roster slot on a goalkeeper, but he's been really, really good. And I believe that they just made that loan move officially permanent. So, you know, they're getting good ball from most of the guys in the top 20 on the depth chart. So they've created some depth. Estevez has shown some flexibility. We all know that he wants to run that 4-3-3. That's very similar to how the U.S. national team play. But over the past month, he's shown the ability to drop into like a 4-4-1-1 with Ferreira underneath Jara. And that's worked. It really worked this past weekend. They've had a couple of recent tough losses, Minnesota at home and at Vancouver, and that bumps them down a little bit, half letter grade. But I didn't expect them to be one of the best teams in the league this year, and I'm pretty sure they are. And that's a really, really good job. So that's an A- to me.
Feels right. Feels good. We'll do the Paul Areola standing in the USMNT segment. Is that right, Dave? Are we going to save it for then? Perfect, because he is the best winger in the league right now on form, I think, and on production. Okay, Inter Miami, Kalen. What's your grade for Phil Neville's boys?
Give him a C. I think fair, but...
wow, tough grade.
But I would say I just don't trust you is kind of my next point. It's just I think they've made some good moves, ones that they've needed to make. You know, they got Campana going after Higuain. They've basically sort of sat him down. They still sub him on late in games, but it's really more just in a management role or if they kind of want to throw it, you know, give somebody else a rest. But he's really been relegated to not a really important role, which is important for the team, and that's really changed a lot. But then you also look at some of the other pieces. Calendar, who is a fellow Berkeley grad, shout out to the Berkeley
Go Bears.
He's been really good in goal for them, and I think they probably waited a little bit too long to give him his chance as far as a run out. Bryce Duke is a player that I've really liked for a long time in his limited moments with LAFC. I thought a smart find to bring him in, and now he's sort of, I think, cemented himself as a starter into the midfield. And they just seem a lot younger, more dynamic. Yedlin coming in has been good. So I like the way this team is kind of set up now, but I still have big question marks as far as, is this sustainable? Like, are they going to turn back to the old Miami? Are they going to find ways to continue to build this young group and continue to get the best out of them? Or I just think also with some of the way the roster inflexibility and ability to go out and make changes mid-season or offload, you know, salaries or whatever, they're a little bit hamstrung. So I thought C for me was pretty fair.
See, that's actually why I think they deserve a higher grade than that, because even within that roster inflexibility, they've created, I think, a solid core and depth, and then added in Campana, a guy who looks very much like a match winner at this point. So based upon what I expected from Inter Miami, like, I think they're at like a B plus or even better, and like they're above the playoff line, man. We're almost halfway into the season. Miami's in the playoffs. That's way more than a C for them. Like, this is a team that we were fighting over to take in the hardware draft because we all thought that they were going to be a wooden spoon team, and they look nothing like that. So I think Kalen's being a very difficult grader right here. So Miami fans.
I took him for the wooden spoon last week on the show, and I've heard nothing but ha-ha, like Nelson.
They're 5-2-2 in the
last
nine.
I know, from Miami fans. They've been up in my mentions, and probably rightfully so. Yeah, rightfully so. Are they going to make this Leo Campana deal permanent? They have the option to do it. We're talking about Martin Paz, but like Leo Campana seems like a no-brainer.
They do have an option to make it permanent. I'm sure they will. I don't know what the mechanism is, given all the sanctions and the used DP slots. It might have to wait logistically until the end of the season when a couple of the extra DPs they have move off the books.
All right, Inter Miami. Kalen got you at a C. It's passing grade, folks. It's passing grade.
It's a fair grade.
Not
yeah.
a Berkeley, but yeah. FC Cincinnati, Dave. Yeah, a little bit of a party, probably at a party school, our FC Cincinnati. Like, you just never know what you're going to get out of them. But it's fun. It's fun. You don't. You might not graduate. TBD.
Yeah, I'll give them a B+ for what they've done so far. Again, as you said, the vibes, like, FC Cincinnati, one, are fun to watch, but two, like, they didn't. The U.S. men's national team had won more home games at TQL Stadium than FC Cincinnati coming into this year, right? So they're competitive again. There is a core and an identity that they're building. They've got two attacking stars, which I don't think we could guarantee coming into this year, or at least coming into last year. Lucho Acosta now has been good. Brandon Vasquez is a big part of what they're building. They have solidified at times the back line, but they've used younger pieces that they could build into the future. And John Nelson and Ian Murphy and other players like that. They've got a GA goalkeeper that they're now using, who that's a huge steal in MLS. If you can get a position like that in that way, you can now spend on the defense in front of them to help them. But mainly it's just that Chris Albright and Pat Noonan are the decision makers. There's competency to what they're doing. There is a build in a direction to what they're doing. And so you can have trust that what you've seen so far, they are in the playoffs, they aren't even the last team in, can potentially continue on and move on. And since Nwoboda's come in, I think his first five appearances, they conceded one goal or less in every one of the games. The last two have been crazy. It seems like Montreal is a bogey team for them. It's 4-3 every time. Just write it down and move on. But outside of that, they've been a lot cleaner defensively with the DP defensive midfielder they've been waiting for 3.5 years.
FC Cincinnati feels like the kid that been failing the last couple of years. Whole school knew it. Whole school knew, like, when you saw the grades go up on the chart and had the code next to him and everybody's trying to decipher, you knew which one was FC Cincinnati because it was at the very bottom. And now they've hit tutoring. They've got some, a little better guidance. And bam. Not only they're passing, they're excelling. It's wonderful to see, and they're fun to watch, and that alone is awesome. But speaking of the home form, still tough. Just two wins at home, but they are winning on the road, so I agree with the B+. Well done, NYCFC. For me, that's an A. It would be an A+ had they got to the CCL final. They were not able to do that against Seattle, so they don't get that additional plus. But I mean, we're talking about a team with 7 wins in 8 games, 6 shutouts, I think, in a row. At this point, that's mm-hmm. 4 teams in MLS have done that. Their young players are progressing, are taking on bigger roles, are driving them to victories. Maxi Morales is still a big part of it, but he's not the only sort of shining light that you have to have. Between Keaton Parks and the guys they've got in the U22 initiative, all thriving. Tati, of course, is Tati. We don't know whether he's going to be around, but I have faith that their front office is either going to, Dave, we don't have to relitigate this, but I have faith that their front office is going to find the right solution for them to continue to chase trophies. So, they're in the Open Cup quarters.
I never said the opposite.
I
said their front office has already accomplished that.
I'm just saying we didn't have the whole Hebert thing. Like, we didn't have to go back, but we did. I think this is a solid A for NYCFC with, the potential for an A+ season. The potential to perhaps even... and I'll curse them right now. Go for a treble if you're talking Open Cup, Shield, and Cup. So, great season for NYCFC. A lot of praise for them. Any disagreement here? Any feedback?
Wait, aren't they also in the right Campeones grade. Cup?
Oh, didn't even... God.
They could
the
go
quad?
For a quadruple.
How could I forget? That's a failing grade for me on different fronts that they're on. Jeez.
And now they know their opponent, right? It'll be Atlas because they won both tournaments?
I believe so, yeah.
Would be my guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The Giants that are Atlas. Back-to-backs for them. NYCFC could go back-to-back. So, yeah, big A for them. New York Red Bulls, Doyle. Let's keep it in the New York area. What do you have for the Red Bulls?
B+. They're playing really good soccer in their way. They're clearly bought into Gerhard Struber's system. I think they're getting real progress from a bunch of the young players in that roster as well, whether it's like homegrown guys like Tolkien and Omer Fernandez, or acquisitions like Frankie Amaya. I thought Drew Yearwood has progressed, so it's weird that he's been in and out of the lineup, but there's a lot to like about them. It looks like Luquinhos was the right kind of acquisition, and Lewis Morgan's had some very good moments as well. What keeps them from getting an A is that they still can't figure it out at center forward. Patrick Klimawa His underlying numbers are really good. But sooner or later, you got to start putting the ball in the back of the net. He mostly has not. Ashley Fletcher looks like a kind of a bust of an acquisition, and that's luckily a short-term acquisition. And then, look, Tom Barlow's he's a fine third center forward to have on your team, but if you're running Tom Barlow out there pretty regularly, you're probably not a trophy threat. And to get up to the A range, they would have to be a trophy threat. But they've been much better than I expected them to be in this year. I thought they would be a fringe playoff team. They're significantly better than that, and have done it in the face of injuries as well. Like Andres Reyes was expected to play a big role, and he's barely, I think he has barely played, right? So it's been very good, very, very good from the Red Bulls.
B+. All right. We'll take that grade and move on. Okay, give me the San Jose Earthquakes grade, Kalen, and you know I had to give this one to you. This was one of the few where I was not randomizing my selections. I had to go Kalen in Northern California.
Yeah. I'm giving them an F. I think at or near the very bottom of the table, they're on 14 points, so they're not at the very bottom, but pretty darn close to it. They've given up by far and away the most goals in the league. By, I think, a healthy margin, maybe 6 goals more than any other club. And I think, when I go into it, there are some things that I actually really like from this team. One, they've gotten away from some of the, really terrible goals that they've conceded. They are still shipping goals. But they're scoring a lot more goals, and the attack looks a lot more together. It has a real nice fluidity to it with Montero, Espinoza, Cal, and Obobese up front. So I think that combination and just playing that, settling on that and going for it has been really good for them. It hasn't quite translated yet to results, although they've been much more competitive since the shift has been made. But for me, it really just kind of goes back to the idea of waiting so long to make the coaching move and what that did for the place in the season, because this team should be at or close to fighting for the playoff line, and the fact that they haven't been there and they haven't made some of those same ways they've gone out and upgraded in the attack, they haven't gone out within MLS and gotten I think the requisite needs that they need in center back position or across that back line, especially either from a starting position or even depth, that when they've had to rotate, it really hasn't worked out for them. So I think, this team has a lot more to go, but and could make a run in the second half of the season to get closer to the playoffs. But I think based on just waiting so long when the writing was on the wall with the coaches, they've put themselves in a really tough position, and now they're having to dig themselves out.
I agree with most of that, but I just want to make the point. They're 3-2-2 since making the coaching changes, the coaching change, and the only two losses were at NYCFC and at LAFC. So I agree. If you want to give them an F, give them an F for waiting too long to make what was obviously a necessary coaching change. But they've been one of the better teams in the league since that change happened.
And this is probably the wrong way to do this, but I also give them credit for, I think, building a competitive roster, but leaving flexibility. Basically knowing Almeida was leaving, maybe not doing it, which is fair to judge them against, but in terms of the roster build, they are not locked into guys that Almeida brought in. Like, there is flexibility to move on now, and they're getting to test out a Jamiro Montero that they could then
classic keep. Case of if you don't turn in any of your assignments for the first 2 months of the semester, just because you had a couple good ones at the end doesn't mean you can raise your grade that much. So
we can't do a show that's based off a metaphor, because then Levy's knee deep every single
moment.
I'm
just reliving my academic days and being like, oh, so if I took zeros for a month, it doesn't matter that I got A's on my essays after that. I got to actually do the daily work. Okay, cool. All right, let's keep it going here. David, you've got Atlanta United.
This was my hardest one. I thought it was really tough for a number of reasons. The first being the health. They just have had so many injuries, and you could blame them as a club or not. It doesn't feel like they acquired injury-prone players or played an overwhelming amount of older players. And so then to judge them is really tough. Luis Araujo is a hit. The guy on the field is the best player on the field pretty much every MLS game he plays in. Thiago Almada seems like they got that one right. that he's going to be a game changer in MLS, that he can be that player when other pieces are out, but especially when other pieces are in, that he can fit with these other guys. But Araújo hasn't played a ton of the season. Now they lose Miles Robinson. Now they lose Brad Guzan. They lose Ozzie Alonso, which is fair to make a complaint that they were going to rely on him anyway at his age and sort of what he's been through. Araújo has been out hurt, and Joseph Martinez has been hurt or not on the field or not himself so far throughout the season until basically this weekend. So I found this the hardest one to give because you've got expectations. Then you sort of have eye test stuff, which is okay. The results aren't, plus the injuries. So I ended at a B minus. I thought a C was too harsh, but they are outside the playoffs, so I could see if that's what you wanted to do. But that's where I ended up.
I think I could go with the B minus because of the Almada signing looking like it is actually going to be a hit outside of bumping referees, which is just never smart if you want to.
They can't give them a B minus. They can't defend set pieces. If they could defend set pieces, they'd be third in the East, and then you would say, okay, B minus, even with all the injuries. But no, even when Miles Robinson was healthy and Guzan was healthy, they couldn't defend set pieces. You're a very easy grader.
All right, RSL, and this is my second A of the grading.
Kalen's too hard a grader, and David Goss is too easy.
Never
would
have
shows
predicted
you
that to
how
be, by
soft
the way.
Long Island is. That's what that's all about.
Coastal
right
elitism. Right
soft
now.
Island. All right. Yeah, I'm going to go A for RSL. They are out of the Open Cup, so that's a bummer for them. They lost to the Giants that are the Northern Colorado Hailstorm at home.
Hailstorm.
That's poor from them. But they're 4 points out of the Supporters' Shield with a team that, Doyle, neither you nor Brian Dunseth nor really anyone can explain why they're getting the results, how they're getting the results, including without Demir Krylock, who is by far and away their best and most influential player. They just win knife fights. They just seem to want it more than anybody else. They are channeling, believing, becoming one with Pablo Mastroeni's mindset and approach to the game and or life. And Riot is humming, man. They're selling it out. The soul is back. They've got Jefferson Savarino coming back. TBD on how effective he's going to be. But you have an ownership group that is new, engaged, that is investing, that wants to make this both the best experience possible. And I think pretty clearly they've shown that they want to make it the best team possible, though we haven't had a chance to see that over the course of multiple transfer windows, which will be the true test. But Real Salt Lake is 4 points out of the Supporters' Shield after a third of the season. That is absurd. That is crazy, crazy overachievement as it pertains to expectations for them, given their recent history within the club, within the front office and ownership side of the club. I mean, it feels against all odds. And honestly, even though you can't explain it, it's like, I don't know. It's been exemplary. It's been excellent. It's been an A for RSL.
I've got no argument with that. I completely agree across the board.
Oh, God, wonderful times in Sandy. All right, Toronto FC, Doyle. Let's take it down and take it down a notch a little bit here.
I gave them a D. I think the silver lining is they're getting a lot of minutes from homegrown kids who could potentially be part of the long-term solution there. And that Jesus Jimenez has been good. And that's two very good things that keeps them from having an F, because the rest of it is such a mess that they would otherwise have an F. They're below the playoff line. Not a million miles below it, but they're below the playoff line. They have one of the worst, I think the second worst defense in the league in terms of goals allowed. The underlying numbers do not rate them at all. It feels, and that matches the eye test, by the way. If you watch a Toronto FC game, it's sometimes shocking how easy it is to play through the middle against this team. It's shocking. And it feels like what we're looking at is a multi-window tear down and rebuild. It's a D.
Hard to argue with that. You've got a DP center back that
has not been good.
Yeah.
Has not been good.
That's been a D in his own right. Pozuelo's out of contract. Bob Bradley does not want to talk about that. Doesn't want to address that one as well. Lorenzo Insigne is coming in, but coming into what?
I think Oso's out of contract as well. So that'll be interesting. Yeah.
I think that's a solid D for Toronto. In our world, I think we can all agree that that's only passing and name only. That's a fail. That's gonna be a fail. Okay. Keep it rolling here. New England Revolution are up, Kalen. This is similar to how Dave was having trouble with Atlanta. I think this is a pretty tough one. Do you want to start with your grade, or do you want to start with your reactions to Adam Buxa taking welcome pictures in France?
Good for Buxa, number one. Maybe not so good for the Revs, at least in the short term. It was a tough one to grade, I think, for me, because when you look at where they were compared to where they are now and the way things have gone for them, I might be more generous than they might be of themselves. I think I would give them like a C+, B-. Is that a grade? Is that not a grade? That's not a grade.
I think that's a grade.
It's a grade.
Okay.
Which would you land on? You know, like.
Yeah.
That means they got like a 78, 79, 80 in your mind.
I think I would give them right around there just because I'm
got to choose
I'm
one, Kalen. Got to choose one.
All right. I'll give them a C+ just to stay
I think that's the more fair of the two.
Yeah.
Knowing what happens now with Buxa. Like if they had a DP striker lined up and they're like, we're going from strength to strength, baby. I mean, maybe you push them into that B territory. But it's a 73-point team.
There were 73-point team. They are below the playoff line, and they had an all-time catastrophic meltdown in CCL, and you gave that team a better grade than you gave Inter Miami. Just want to get that out there.
Like I said, I think I'm giving
them
a
favorites.
I'm being a little bit more generous, I think, than they might even be to themselves. And I think part of the reason I feel generous towards them is one, CCL is not an easy competition to go through, and like that does take something out of you. Two, I don't think they were planning. I mean, maybe this shouldn't give them the benefit of the doubt, but I just think it can't be understated how much they've lost. So like taking out Buchanan out of the team, Buxa, now he wasn't available a lot of it, and now he's gone. Turner's been gone most of the season already. He's sort of come back for like a cup of tea on his way to Arsenal. So like you just take out three big players like that.
Gustavo Bow has missed pretty much every MLS regular season.
Yeah, and you're sort of left a little bit with some of the supporting cast and then Carlos Hill. But Carlos Hill is a player that still needs people around him with movement and that can like read the game the way he can. And then also he's not going to be the one that has to ultimately finish, right? Or defend. He's sort of playing the connecting piece between the both. And when you miss those special players on the wing or up top or even behind you, suddenly those small margins that we saw them win so many times last year turn the other direction. And that's the most troubling part to me is, one, the uncharacteristic way they've been conceding goals, which have been in a lot of catastrophic errors throughout the season, and then the time at which they've conceded. I think they've conceded the most goals in the last 15 minutes in Major League Soccer. So, and that includes my beloved San Jose Earthquakes. So that is, I think, more of a cause for concern as far as where this team is at mentally right now, because the last 15 for me is where I judge kind of, you know, how can you tell what a team's culture or mentality is? I think often the last 15 minutes of a match will reveal some of that. And so when you see New England beginning to ship, and when last year, that's when they just stepped on teams' throats the last 15 minutes of games. And they just have not had that, and quite the opposite. So I'm actually a little bit concerned about them going towards the playoffs. But I just think when I think of the, like, what they've had to endure as far as all the players that have been gone or are on their way out, that's where I've kind of given them a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt in my score.
Feels like they have the opportunity to drop big time or to rise big time. TBD. Minnesota United, Dave, grade them.
This is the David Goss grade. I connect with this grade the most of every single one. From first through eighth grade, I had the same teacher that my sister had had previously. My sister is an engineer. She went to school for architecture, AP Latin, valedictorian speaker, and everything. And a teacher would look at the roster on the first day and go, oh, gas? Perfect. Angel student, quiet, does all their work. Great. And then the first report card would come, and it would always say, can do better. I know there's more potential. And that's where you come with Minnesota United. Technically, they're tied for a playoff spot. But when you come into the season and you look at it, you say, explosive talent, designated players all over the field, multiple goalkeepers that can start in MLS, club captains, longtime players, all these things. I expect more. So Minnesota United, you get the David Goss grade. Welcome. You get D for the season so far, even though you're tied for a spot.
I like it. I like it. How did you deliver those report cards to your parents?
I we all knew. I just be like, we all know what's going to happen. Then my parents would go, you guys have different strengths. Sam's really good at thinking and school and grades and things like that. And you're so fun to be around sometimes.
Oh, man.
So that's the same with Minnesota, by the way. Super fun to be around. Great atmosphere, great colors, great crest. They can sometimes play games over the course of 24 hours. Who else does that? Unique, exciting. And there are moments, right? There's moments where Reynoso picks apart a defense. There's moments where Robin Ludd gets into good positions and is finishing. And you look at it and say, okay, maybe this will work. DJ Taylor's been a really good find for them. Metanera's missed the entire season. And DJ Taylor has been at MLS starting level and at times better in some of the games. Dane St. Clair, they've given the opportunity to. He's probably going to start for Canada once over the next 2 weeks to see if he gets a shot to move up that depth chart. There's positives there. There's things that you can be proud of and enjoy, but the overall feeling is underwhelming, and that's
can
tough.
Do better. That's been my, I think that's my favorite grade and explanation so far right there. Orlando City is mine. I am giving them a C dead on. They might be above the playoff line. But I think can do better applies to them results-wise as well as the performance of their big-time players. Outside of maybe Mauricio Pereira, who's been quietly one of the best chance creators in the league, but Erkan Kara and Facundo Torres have been sort of like, not at the level we were sold on just yet, despite having moments. I mean, there are some times where they come out of games and they're a straight-up F. Like, it ain't even close. Like, they're saying, look, we mailed this one in. We weren't even in it. This was awful. And then there are other games where I'm like, oh, yeah, they can get it done. Now, injuries are an issue for them. Antonio Carlos, losing him, he might be the most irreplaceable player on the team. And they're still alive.
But they've replaced him, which is why C is harsh, right? When he got
hurt. Grade me. Grade my grade.
When he got hurt, I thought that they were going to go straight into the toilet. Everything else that you said is correct, right? They're wildly up and down. I think Cara and Torres have been kind of disappointing, though I think they've been playing better together lately. But the fact is they're still what, top four in the Eastern Conference. They've started to put together, I think, a consistent run of results, if not necessarily performances, and they've done it without the center. Like, as soon as Antonio Carlos was hurt, we all thought this season was over. Well, not over, but we all thought that this was a team that was going to be fighting for their lives down around seventh, eighth spot in the standings. And they have done more than just survive. They've played pretty good soccer. So I think B minus at the worst feels like what you should be given Orlando City at this point.
Let's see. At the parent-teacher conference, sometimes parents can make a convince. I'm going to go C+, Anders. Give it a final C+. We're still in the C zone, but we're just going to bump them up. We're going to give them the, you know, look, if I just get a couple more assignments in, if I make up here and this, that, and the other, I can get up to B. I can be in the good zone.
But has Orlando signed a player who hasn't played for them yet? Because that gets them up to B. That's sort of the rubric that we're working on. Well,
if they had signed a 33-year-old washed midfielder, then they would be an A+ team.
They do have Pato, but I guess that's not enough for me.
No, not enough. Pato is an individual. Oh, we won't talk about that. There's some varying reports.
We can see if they want to bring back Julio Baptiste. Maybe that will
change it for me.
Mind.
Just the rumor would get him up to a B, I would think. That's some extra credit.
Probably.
All right, Seattle Sounders, Doyle. What do you got for them?
A+. Like, they won CCL. They haven't played great since CCL, but they're, like, I think 2.25 points per game since then. They've developed homegrown kids. They worked Rusnak in perfectly. Schmetzer's made great tactical shifts. Like, just this past weekend, he dropped Ladero back to the two line in that 4-2-3-1 to get him and Rusnak just releasing guys into space and completely annihilated Charlotte over the final 25 minutes. A+++++.
Can't argue. Can't argue.
Nope.
You take the curse off the show, you get an A+.
Yeah. You do the special project nobody else has even come close to getting done. Well, has come close, but failed miserably in the end. You get the A++. Club de Foot, CF Montreal, Kalen, that's yours. How do we feel about the new crest, by the way? All those who like it, say aye.
I like the new crest.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah, that's a part of it. So, yeah, why not break that into it? I was already going to give him an A, but, yeah, now it's like a strong A. And it's I think, you know, we weren't expecting them to be, what, top three in the East, I think they are right now. So,
yep.
That's been super impressive. I think Wilfred Nancy's got to be up there in the conversation for Coach of the Year. Mihailovic, we'll get to the national team, just gutted that he's not going to be able to participate, it looks like. That was confirmed, right?
Yep. Yes. He's not going to be there.
Okay.
Yep.
But he's an MVP candidate, I think, already, and that definitely, I think, in the running for best 11 for sure. So, they've been great all year. So I give them their flowers. A lot of the signings, I like Alistair Johnson coming in. Kai Kamara's contributed off the bench. Kyoto's like really been consistent. My big question was actually, and part of the case I was making for Mihailovic was that imagine where this team would be without him. Well, we got our like first little peek at that in this last week, and they had a really impressive performance even after he came out of the match. So I thought that was even more of a positive, not to take anything away from Mihailovic, but more to give more to the team. So I've been really impressed with Montreal right now. Hey.
Also, it sucks for Georgi Mihailovic. It sucks for everything. But if you're Montreal, it is actually the one time you want. Like, it could happen because now you have a layoff.
Yeah.
Right? You have an international break for him to get healthy and come back to be able to play for you.
So. No replacement for Georgi for the USMNT per Greg Berhalter. Says they were stacked.
Justice for Jabo.
They were stacked up from an attacking perspective, so they don't need to bring another player in. Okay, Vancouver Whitecaps, David Goss, give me a grade.
I pulled a Kalen and made something up. I'm going to give them an E. I don't know if that's a grade, but why do we go from D to F? Why isn't there a letter in between? It's not an F. They are not last in the Western Conference. They have had positive signs over the last 3 weeks, consistently, not just one off, and then they lose 7-2 in the next game. They have trended in the right direction. They've dealt with COVID in a way that every other team hasn't had to. So far this season, they've had injuries. They have a DP they brought in who hasn't been able to play for them, but will, I think, improve what they've been able to do. They've barely been able to get White, Cavallini, and Gauld on the field at the same time at any point in this season. They've lost Thomas Hassall now for a large stretch after losing Maxime Crépeau late on. So there's excuses. There is some signs of life. They're moving on in the Canadian Championship, which is huge for them. And so it's not an abject failure. But at the same time, all the good work they did to close last year is gone. They are starting from scratch once again of what their identity is, how they're able to play to win, and just confidence, I think, from their fan base to believe that they can do
this. I just looked it up. Is there an E on the grading scale in Canada? Confirmed no E on the grading scale in Canada. But the Vancouver Whitecaps get one nonetheless, so decipher that as you will. Let's see. Let's keep it going here. Some tough grades as we roll through. DC United, I'm going to give them – we're definitely in the D zone. I'm going to give them a D+, and I think you could go less than that because they've regressed results-wise from last year. The reason why they get the plus onto their D is because they made the coaching decision, and they made it fairly quickly. You could argue they maybe shouldn't have started the season with Hernan Losada, but once it was pretty clear that it was unsustainable, they pulled that trigger. Got Chad Ashton in, kept some continuity with the coaching staff, etc. The plus also is there for Taxi Fontas, for paying the money to get him in early. They could improve. They could get better if they go sign a better nine. I don't think Michael Estrada is going to be long-term for them on the loan side, and I don't think Ola Kamara fits in long-term to the vision they have for what they want
David
this club
Goss,
to be.
David Goss tricked me into taking Estrada in the Golden Boot draft, by the way. He's a monster.
He's going to start over Lea Campagna for Ecuador. He had a goal and assist last week.
I know. I'm just saying. I think he was
Hernan's
guy.
How are we
guy.
Doing like, on the – anyways, I got to know because Hani's scoring goals, Ruy Diaz, I'm making a run up that thing.
We'll get Anders to do the math okay. for
I thought I had
as we come
Ruy
back Diaz. As we come back from the international break, we'll have Anders do the math so we see where everybody stands. But D-plus for DC United, the results are down, though. They've just got two wins in their last 11. They won their first two games to open the season, then it all just sort of fell apart for them. And big question marks for them. What do they do with the Areola money, the allocation, and do they go sign another DP in the summer window? So D-plus there. Sporting Kansas City, Doyle, I can imagine what the grade might be here.
It's an F. They got wiped out by injuries, and then they held on with this great core of theirs for a year too long, right? And it's none of the guys who are playing – big roles right now look like they are part of a long-term future that fixes this, and none of the young guys look like sure things. So I don't think anything's gone right for them. They're tracking towards a wooden spoon, which is far and away the worst year of Peter Vermes's tenure. Feels like a massive rebuild is coming. It's a tough, it's just tough, but like it's an F.
Yeah, we're at a point where after a loss to Vancouver Whitecaps at home, Peter's evaluating the performance, and I thought we actually played reasonably well, and they lost at home to Vancouver, who are also competing at the bottom of the West for the Shield. So
what is it,
just
like,
tough
like
times.
One win in ten, I think, for them.
Tough times all around for them. They do have the Open Cup, so there's a run there that they could make. LAFC, Kalen, we're in the A zone, I feel, probably here.
Yeah, I give them an A. With all the changes that they made, sometimes that can take a little while to click, most notably at the manager position with the brand new manager coming in. And then I think he's really gotten the best out of this lineup so far, and he's really picked the right people at the right time. They haven't gotten the best out of Vela to this point. I know he's carrying a knock right now, so that's TBD, but still to be top of the table with no like flying Vela right now and missing Rodriguez for a spell, and Arango's been good but really hasn't fully clicked, and that whole attack we haven't even seen the best of it yet. So I've been really impressed with the LAFC, so I give them a solid A.
Big questions though. How many times can we talk about Carlos Vela's contract? We won't do it again. We'll just mention that he still hasn't
if they get an A in this summer transfer window on top of the level they've been playing at so
Say
far this year,
double.
Which I
Say
agree
it.
Is an A, then this team, I mean, they're going to be favorites going into the playoffs. Like John Thorington's done a really good job over the past 10 months or so.
All right, let's keep on the good job train here. A lot of pats on the backs, teachers' pets, at least recently so. Philadelphia Union, Dave. They're the grinders in the classroom.
Yeah, I've got two grades left. I'm pretty sure Doyle's going to complain that I graded too high on both of them. But I'm going to give an A- to the Philadelphia Union for what they've done so far. They're one game out of first place in the Eastern Conference. I think they're about four points out of the Supporter Shield, which is a spot they should be in. The issue for them this season is they started hotter and they have cooled down since then, and it felt like they had an opportunity to build an advantage ahead of NYCFC as the season went along. But I think one of the things is they've reestablished their style and what makes them great, which has been impressive. They've also rotated out a number of starters or key pieces. Nathan Harriel now is a full-time starter for them. Gosdag has now established himself as a full-time starter. Jimmy Armentero is not there. And Carranza is now a full-time starter. So for a team that won the Supporters Shield 2 years ago, went to the Eastern Conference Finals last year, they have switched over a large part of their minutes, and they've been able to maintain that success. And I think actually reestablish it going forward as a continued process. So I picked them to win Supporter Shield last week. I still feel good about all of that. And if you took all of that away, they made like $6 million last week without doing anything. So that alone would have been a positive move for them in Brendan Aaronson moving from Salzburg to Leeds, which we talked about on this show. was somewhat credit to them for picking the right spot for him to develop and move again, rather than the biggest name or the most money they could find out of that move. So overall, A minus for the season for the Philadelphia Union. I don't know that they can get an A if they don't win a trophy this year. And so that's what sort of will decide it going forward as they totter between A and B.
Any thoughts? Move on.
I'd give them a B plus. I think they've been underwhelming for like almost two straight months at this point. Like they don't feel like they're improving. So I'd go B plus, but like A minus isn't irrational by any stretch.
Portland Timbers, just is an F for me. MLS Cup finalist that's barely holding on to getting a point per game. They've had injuries for sure, but it just feels like an F to me. Just all around grade, it's just an F. I'm going F for the Portland Timbers so far this year. We'll see if they can pull that grade up over the course of the rest of the season. Because Anders is telling us to move quickly, we won't analyze that further. Nashville, Doyle, what do you got?
I give them a B. They handled that season opening 8-game road trip, I think, as well as anyone could have. They added another nice win to it this weekend in Colorado. They've been really good on the road. They haven't been great at home. They have 2 wins and 2 draws in 4 games, and it's because they're the same exact team that they were last season. They have not made any progress in terms of being able to win the game with the ball. And, like, that's what Nashville was going to be graded on this year. If they can make that jump from really good team to a team that could beat anyone playing, you know, any kind of style just about and be a real threat to win trophies. And thus far in this season, they're not really. It's still the honey show, or nothing. And so I think just continuing to be really good, that's a good year. That's a B. But they need to do something beyond that in order to get B plus, A minus, or to an A, and they just haven't.
So I agree with you on MLS regular season. The thing with this is everything you described is a great knockout team, and now they've got a second shot because Open Cup hasn't existed since they've existed, right? And they didn't get to go to MLS's back. So now they get 2 shots at winning something that is probably what they're geared towards. There's a decent chance they win Open Cup this year. And then I just think that, I mean, if they win a trophy, it pushes them up to an A. It'd be their first trophy in
I would agree with that. Totally agree with that.
All right, TBD for them. But right now, nice solid grade for Nashville SC. Colorado Rapids, Kalen, this is the team that Nashville went to, who had previously been, I think, unbeaten at home and ran them off the field in about 17 minutes. Things are a little up and down for the Rapids so far.
Yeah, it reflects with my grade. I give them a C, which is disappointing. I think, you know, this is a team that finished first in the West last year and had really set a new standard, it felt like, for them as far as this is where we are, this is where we should be, and it wasn't a fluke. And now we're seeing them kind of feel like they're taking a step backwards. And the one thing that it seemed like they were going to be solid on was like mentality and being tough to play against and tough to play against at home. And this week they just kind of like came out so flat, and Nashville just, you know, talk about the honey show, just ran over them, and there was no way back for them at that point. And it's just been kind of schizophrenic, where at times they'll come away with some really good results. They beat LAFC, they beat Seattle, but then they turn around and they lost to Sporting San Jose, and then also this last Nashville game. So a little bit schizophrenic, because I actually expected them to be right at or around the top of the Western Conference this year with Mark Anthony Kay, and then adding Jossi, and just having more time as a system or with each other. And so it's been disappointing so far. So I think they're not in like rough shape, but outside the playoffs at this point in the season for a team that finished top of the West last year, when I think the West has been kind of up for grabs. We've seen Dallas really step up, and other teams maybe drop down a little bit, like Minnesota and some teams that we thought might be a little bit better than they are. So it seemed pretty ripe for them to stay at or around the top of the West, and it just hasn't been like that.
You think they regret the Kellen Acosta trade?
I don't know. I think Mark Anthony Kay is going to be really good for them. I love Kellen at LAFC. I think he's been great for them. But I just think they got to get these pieces fitting. I like, even still, when I look at how these pieces fit with Rubio and Giassi, I understand that he plays underneath and they think they can kind of work together, but I'm not exactly sure how those pieces fit. So I still think they've got some work to do to figure out what it all looks like in one piece.
Two teams left. There are a lot of teams in this league. We're ending with three C's, at least in the names. Chicago Fire, Dave, what do you got?
I gave them a C, which maybe some people would say is too high.
Jeez, Come on, man.
Yeah, I know. But they were the worst defensive team in the league, or second worst, whatever it was, at times last year. They fixed that for the most part. And the other issue is they are the worst offensive team in MLS, but that hasn't been the case since Jairo Torres and Mueller have been there. We just haven't seen a ton of it. So for a team that has only scored 13 goals this year, they scored six of them in the last week and a half. That is a huge shift. So obviously on success, on what they've done, it's bad. But in terms of promise and build, I think there are some interesting pieces there. If Weeby can give grades for guys who don't even
have,
oh
they
my
fixed,
God.
Have they fixed their defense? Yeah, they've given up 18 goals in their last seven games.
The attack
man.
Got better, then the defense went super south.
Maybe, but also these people have played together. So, yeah, I understand the complaint about balance, that when they were good defensively, they struggled offensively. I would like to see it for a little bit, though, with genuine MLS starting attacking players on the field and then going back to the fundamentals that were able to keep them from giving up a ton of goals. I think part of it has also been on Gaga Slonina, which, okay, you're going to live and die on an 18-year-old goalkeeper. That's going to happen. But I would like to think what he's gone through over the last 6 weeks is unique for his experience of deciding on a national team, deciding on a future, and having all these things going on top of trying to be a starter as an 18-year-old in MLS. I could be wrong about that, and this could be who he is, and he's mistake-prone, and they're going to have to deal with that the rest of the year. But they shouldn't have lost that game to FC Cincinnati. They shouldn't have lost or given up the 2 points at Red Bulls, and all of that falls on him.
Feels like from the start with MLS today, the Fire have been a teacher's pet. That's reflected in the C. Okay, that's fine. We finish here.
You better believe if they make the playoffs, I'm going to burn this show. This podcast will cease to exist.
I actually feel disrespected by you giving them a C because it shows a real lack of respect for where you think it's going
to be. Oh, yeah. Zero expectations in that one.
Columbus Crew finishes us off here. I got Columbus. I want to give them an F, and I'm going to give them a D-. The only reason they get the D- is they are just 2 points out of the playoffs. They have an open DP spot. It seems like they didn't handle the Jesse's Artist thing the best they could when it comes to return and timing. And also just, you know, respect for Giassi's contributions.
Torching him on the way out the door.
Respect for his contributions to their club over many years. And look, this is an MLS Cup winning team that didn't make the playoffs last year and is outside the playoffs this year. In a lot of ways, I kind of feel like I'm being a little charitable with the D-, but I'm going to give them D-, and just point out that they still do have an MVP candidate in Lucas Alarion. They have a potentially good midfield and back line and goalkeeper. You know, if they can get that DP forward and they can get back on the same page, maybe they rise up these maybe their grade rises into more of a passable zone, but for now, not passable. Okay, that's the end of our grades. How do we feel? Any final thoughts on our grading so far? Or we want to call it good and go, USMNT?
I give us a C- on our grading ability. So.
I still can't believe a D
is
a
passing grade.
I can't believe a D is a pass.
Not in the car household. Never was, never will be.
That's not Pac-12 stuff.
By the way, Lucas Zelarayan has not scored a goal since March 12th. So we're going on 3 months now, and Weeby just called him an MVP candidate. So there
no,
you
I
go.
Said well, I don't think candidate. I said potential. It could be.
Okay.
He has that talent.
Caliber.
Good one. Caliber. Everything comes up C for us right now. Okay, let's talk USMNT and get on out of here. Ukraine, Scotland playing this week. Then the winner plays Wales. The U.S. will figure out then who are in their group at the World Cup. Costa Rica also trying to play their way in. So those are big matches to pay attention to. Let's talk U.S., though. Of course, as we mentioned at the top of the show, Morocco and Cincinnati on Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2, Unimas, Tudien, if you want to watch it. Of course, you'll also have the watch long up at the same time. Just go ahead and mute the commentators and listen to Susanna, Charlie Doyle, DeMarcus Beasley, and Mehdi Bellucci. Break it down. Have fun. We're on Twitch, YouTube Live, so if you want to ask questions, you want to try to pull stories out of DeMarcus or Charlie or whoever it might be, just get in there and ask for them. Should be a fun time. We really enjoy doing those. They're really a blast. What are you watching? What do you care about? What matters most for Greg Berhalter, Doyle?
I actually want to see the team's sort of shape and principles of play, because from day one with Berhalter, it was this 4-3-3 positional play system, very methodical buildup, and we've seen that evolve over the years to the point where by the end of qualifying, the U.S. was playing against the ball. Had something like 40% possession down in Mexico in that game that the U.S. Should have won if they could have finished those chances. The home game against Panama, I don't think we were above 50% possession. We had a couple other late victories where the U.S. were basically. It's not like energy drink soccer, like just play always direct and win your 50-50s and go. But it's very pressing. It's very vertical. It is not about patience and build up. It's about immediately exploiting any advantages that you seem to have. So it's different. It's very different from what Berhalter started as, even at the start of qualifying. And I'm curious to see over the course of this window if the shift he made over the final two qualifying windows was something that was sort of forced upon him and that he felt he had to do pragmatically in order to qualify, or if it's sort of part of a new philosophy for him in how the U.S. are going to be playing over the course of the rest of 2022 into the World Cup itself. And I honestly think this window will give us a good look into that.
There is some news in this window. I don't know if we've mentioned, but Zach Steffen, injury, not able to participate, so he won't be around. Of course, Georgi Mihailovic will not be around. They aren't making a replacement on that. There is some news this morning coming from Greg Berhalter's availability. Before we get into Kalen and Dave, what you're looking for. And Brendan Aaronson's going to start, I believe, in midfield for the first time since El Salvador in the first game of the octagonal, I want to say. That's the last time he played, quote-unquote, centrally. That's sort of off the top of my head, but that's what Berhalter is saying. Also, Berhalter saying that the starting center-back pairing is going to be Long and Zimmerman. And so we'll see those two guys together. I think in six games together, almost 700 minutes, they've given up two goals. So that's a pretty good track record, even though Miles Robinson and Walker Zimmerman also had a great track record. So we'll see that pairing together. And Weston McKennie apparently has about 20 minutes. But what we're all wondering, what everybody wants to talk about and has been the case for more than a year now, maybe even longer, Kalen, is the number nine position. What do you want to see? How does this shake out?
I still think this is Ferreira's spot to lose at this point. I think the way he... to Doyle's point around the system, the way he fits into Greg's system and the way he plays it every week with Dallas and has found success to start the year, I think that's really given him a leg up on the competition. That said, I think Berhalter's still open to rolling the dice a bit, and I think he rightly recognizes that we need some flexibility up front and some different profiles, and that's where Haji Wright comes into the picture as far as someone who's very different from Ferreira. He's 6'4". I think, talented young player coming through the youth system, but kind of has been, all over Europe. But has found his form as of late. And we've seen this happen in the past with strikers that come into the national team in late, have some confidence, get on a roll, provide something different, fill a specific need that is lacking within the number nine striker position for us, and just somebody that we can play a little bit more direct to at times, somebody that can just occupy some space in a way. Ferreira has been super clever about the way that he's tucks underneath and finds space, and then really combines, is really good in tight spaces and finding those little soft pockets. But at times I don't know how useful that's going to be in a situation where that midfield is completely clogged and you've got Declan Rice and others just kind of like completely blocking that midfield. So I think that's an interesting one. I'll be watching him, but I do think this is Ferreira's spot. Now, I guess the X factor is, do they throw another name at the number nine position? Do they put a winger up front? Do they play with someone else as a false nine besides Ferreira? I don't think he's necessarily going to do that, because I generally don't think it's a good idea to like break one piece of the car to fix another piece. Just find a new piece that fits, or that you think can plug in there. So I would sort of stray away personally from trying necessarily some of these wingers like Weah, or I know Christian's played there with the national team, but I just think he's too important on the left right now. So there's a little bit of shuffling going on. So the number nine position is going to be interesting, but I do think it is Ferreira's spot to lose.
What do you got, Div? What are you watching?
For me, it's the winger core, and it's positive and negative. I think all these players have different attributes, and they're all really fun to watch, and they can all affect the game in different ways. And I think it's sort of the conversation so far, Doyle saying, what's the style, what's the intent, what's the purpose, into what Kalen talked about with who the center forward is. It all sort of ripples down to these conversations. I think it's a game every 3 days at the World Cup. It's not going to be the same starting lineup all three times. So you'll need to have depth. You'll need to have options. The question is, over the course of these four games, can you build an idea of, well, if Ferreira starts, these are the guys that fit best with him, but then these guys can change the game if Ahadji Wright or Giassi Zardes starts game two, right? And so I think, to me, Ferreira dropping deep says, well, now you've got Pulisic and Weah, who are both goal scorers who can stretch the field over the top. That seems like the right pairing. But at the same time, if you are pressing high, can Timothy Weah be that center forward for you? Where does Paul Areola kind of fit into this mix now that the guy scoring bangers left and right, playing on both sides, playing with the ball, being better for FC Dallas? How does he insert himself? Jordan Morris, we saw before the injury, I think he was a starter on this team. He probably isn't back there yet from what we're seeing in MLS production, but what does he look like with this group? So there's legitimately six options in this camp that can play in these spots. Every single one of them brings a different aspect. Every single one of them changes the game in a different way from those positions. I'm curious to see what Greg Berhalter's staff thinks, right? Because what he rolls out there is clearly what they're preparing. If he changes it from one game to the other, it's probably predetermined. So what did they come into the camp thinking were the pairings they wanted to see? How do they affect the fullbacks that play behind them? I think there's a lot of different options and question marks. There's a lot of quality there. You know, for a while now I've said I think Timothy Weah is the most dangerous, game-changing, and effective player that the U.S. has on the wing, and I think he did that for large stretches of the national team pool. He's my starting point. As Kalen said, I wouldn't break part of the car to fix another part. But I also think he's a great player, and he can play in a number of different roles. So it's interesting. Brendan Aaronson, if he plays centrally, that changes the calculus as well. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of opportunity. And when I look at specifically Morocco, a team that's going to play probably five in the back with Hakimi at wing back, Messina, who's a little safer, that's a test. But that, I think, is a test relative to what the U.S. is going to see at the World Cup, and this is a great opportunity to sort of figure out how you react to those teams, and I think Uruguay is similar.
What do we think about Aaronson in midfield? And Doyle, maybe I should just direct this at you. What do you think about that? And you were talking about being more direct, being more vertical.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's a really low usage player, and usually with midfielders, especially in the 4-3-3 that Berhalter has primarily played, you want them getting on the ball a ton. And this was a criticism that everybody had of Weston McKennie 2 years ago. And over the past 2 years, he became a much higher usage midfielder. And like the best example of it is the home win over Mexico. He was all over the ball that game. He ran the show that game. And that wasn't something that he originally had. And that's something that, you know, Brendan Aaronson doesn't really have. And he doesn't play like that for RB Salzburg. With the way they play, like, he's more of a central winger. You know, it's all north-south. You don't set tempo. You don't find the ball by checking back into pockets. You're always putting pressure on. So it's a different sort of look. We saw, as you mentioned, we saw it once in qualifying. It was really bad. He really struggled with it. But with the way the U.S. has evolved and with Ferreira acting kind of as a number 10 in build-up play, before becoming a number nine in, you know, the final kill patterns for attacking play. I could see Ferreira sort of complementing Aronson and those two guys working well in terms of their who stays, who goes off ball movement. But it's not a guarantee. I don't have the highest expectations for it working out, but it's absolutely worth checking out, 100%.
What happened in that El Salvador game, I think that's what it was, but I'm not 100% sure either, was they didn't play to his strengths and he was completely invisible. And now you lost a quality player on the wing and you got nothing at central midfield. So if they do not play to his strengths, it makes no sense to make the move. If you do, then I'm super excited because I think it plays to a lot of these players' strengths, and I would love to see the U.S., Doyle said at the top, I'd love to see them be that high-pressing, everything direct, everything forward.
Seems like a worthwhile experiment and time to experiment with Weston McKennie coming back from injury and, according to Berhalter, only being available for really 20 minutes. Why not? Why not give it a try and see? I just want everyone out there to know and understand the dedication that Matt Doyle had to that point. Clearly, his phone just buzzing, just ringing that entire time. We were all wondering whose phone was it? Who's ignoring it? Wasn't me, wasn't Dave, wasn't Kaylee. We went through the chat. Here's a finish this off real quick. I'm watching Matt Turner. This is a big opportunity for him to get these games once again. It's not like Berhalter hasn't seen him, doesn't know what he has, but every opportunity you get before the World Cup that the other guy can't have is super valuable. And I'm extremely, extremely interested to see what he does at Arsenal. I think he has one more game. Buxa seems gone, but I think Matt Turner has one more game with the Revs. Then he's off to Arsenal to, try to win a spot, to try to force his way in, to try to have what Zach Steffen has at the level of training week to week and getting Greg Berhalter's mind as a possible starter. Super bummed for Georgie. Just want to share a quote here from Greg. Quote, we were really looking forward to working with him, but what I told him was to focus on getting better and continue to do what you've been doing. And if you do that, there will be other opportunities down the road. We'll see if Georgie can get back into this group and maybe push his way into a 23-man roster. Seems like a long shot at this point for him. So I'm curious to see who the third CB is. I think it's pretty clear right now that Zimmerman and Long is going to be the preferred pairing. But could Richards get in? He's not here. So you have Cameron Carter-Vickers, who got back in the group. Can he force his way in? If he plays, I expect him to. Who will be paired with and how will he play? And then Eric Palmer-Brown seems to have a little bit of a foothold as well. So can he make that into a more comfortable and secure position? And then everybody wants to see Joe Scally and Malik Tillman, so I'm sure we'll see them at some point in this camp. But that's it. Wednesday against Morocco, the U.S. Going to take them on. And we don't have time for the mailbag, so let's wrap it up. Let us know if you have issues with the grades that we gave your club. Sure, go ahead.
Can I throw this in from the mailbag on Twitter from Stall Tactics. He says,
perfect. Stall Tactics. As an expert, of course it's Stall Tactics.
Yeah, as an expert on teacher archetypes, he gives us all, this is anticipation, hasn't heard the show yet. At Empire Goss, will always grade easy. Nailed it. Kalen Carr, tough but fair, but on a 50-50, he's got your back. Matt Doyle, same as Kalen, but the other direction. On a 50-50, he's grading you lower. Andrew Reeby, going to grade harsh, but he grades harsh to everyone. And Charlie Davies, who isn't even on the show, still gets a shot fired here, gets, if he likes you, first impression, you're set. If he doesn't, watch out, and you'll never know why. Anders, he's parent and teacher, burying everyone so his kid is top by default.
Anders is he's grading on word count. He's like, look, I told you 1,500 words. You're at 1,505. You fail. None of this counts. Don't you dare go over my word count. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Always love getting your mail. Mark Royale, we did get your email here. A long one on our content choices from last Thursday. But maybe we'll address those at a later date, or I'll just email you back, man. All right, that's it for us. We will see you on Thursday to wrap up U.S. Morocco. By the way, a mention that should probably have gotten up earlier in the show. Canada did find an opponent. Iran out, Panama in. So
well, that's not our fault. They announced it like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, just throw it in there.
We can't put it at the top of the show. All
right, have a good week, everybody. Adios.